Take it away, Joe.
Yes, this is a review of the tentative agenda decision published in the September 2011 IFRIC update. Paragraph 51C of IS 12 contains a rebuttable presumption for the purpose of recognizing deferred tax that carrying amount of an investment property measured at fair value will be recovered through sale, and explains that the presumption is rebutted if the investment property is depreciable and is held within a business model whose objective is to consume substantially all of the economic benefits embodied in the investment property over time rather than through sale. The committee received a request to clarify whether that presumption can be rebutted in cases other than the case described in paragraph 51C of IS 12. The tentative agenda decision published in September 2011 IFRIC update on this issue addresses two aspects of the application of the rebuttable presumption. First, whether the presumption can be rebutted in cases other than the cases described in paragraph 51C of IS 12. We named that issue one in the agenda paper for this meeting, and whether in the case in which the presumption is rebutted, the deferred tax should reflect recovery of the carrying amount entirely for use, rather than based on a dual purpose analysis. We named this issue two in the agenda paper. This issue, please let me point it out, was not raised in the original submission to the committee. In the tentative agenda decision, it's noted on issue one that the presumption can be rebutted in other circumstances as well, provided that there's sufficient evidence available to support that rebuttal, and second, on the second issue, that the resulting deferred tax should reflect a recovery of the carrying amount entirely for use if the presumption is rebutted. The committee decided not to take this issue onto its agenda because it thought that the standard is clear and that diversity in practice on the rebuttal of the presumption should not emerge. We have received 8 comment letters with respect to the tentative agenda decision. While the majority of constituents supports the decision not to take the issue onto the committee's agenda or did not object to the decision, not to take it onto the agenda, there were very divergent views on the specific aspects of this issue. This range of views reflects divergent opinions of the constituents on the following two issues. First of all, whether issue one and two need to be addressed through an interpretation or the annual improvements process, or whether an agenda decision is sufficient. And second, whether deferred tax should reflect recovery of the carrying amount entirely for use if the presumption is rebutted. Considering the arguments made in the comment letters, we want to highlight that all the constituents agreed that the statement in the tentative agenda decision, if the presumption is rebutted, the resulting deferred tax should reflect recovery of the carrying amount entirely for use, goes beyond of an agenda decision. We agree with the constituents that the statement in the tentative agenda decision is de facto interpretation. We think it's not reflected in the wording of the current standard. Excluding a dual purpose analysis does not conform with paragraph 51 and 51A of IS 12. Moreover, we do not think that issue 2 can be addressed through an annual improvement process or by an interpretation, because we think it's neither clarifying or correcting in nature, nor could it be resolved within the confines of existing IVRSs. Consequently, we recommend that the committee should reaffirm that accordingly, we propose to delete the last two sentences of the second paragraph of the tentative agenda decision, and that the committee should reaffirm its decision not to take this issue onto its agenda, but with the amendments proposed in Appendix A to this paper. So we want to ask the committee the following question. Does the committee agree with the staff recommendation not to take the issue onto its agenda, and that it should proceed with the agenda decision, but with the amendments proposed in Appendix A of the agenda paper? Comment?
Guido.
I agree with the staff, and I agree with the change in the wording of the tentative agenda decision. The only issue that I want to raise, and maybe Thomas can comment on that, is if we go down this route, then I have a problem with the example in 51C that says that the presumption is rebutted if you have a business model whose objective is to consume substantially all of the economic benefits through use. And I was wondering why the board said, well, an example is where substantially all of the benefits are consumed through use. I could see a model where 50% or 40% are consumed through use. I don't know whether you have an answer to that. You know, I was wondering why substantially all is in there, which seemed to me that, and maybe that's also what directed us to say, well, if it's not there, then it should be entirely through use. I don't know whether you have an answer to that, Thomas, but that would be the only thing that worries me a little bit about the outcome.
I can talk a little bit about the background, and I noticed that Mitsuhiro is in the audience, so he will throw up a shoe at me or something if I get this wrong. This amendment was designed to address a specific case in a specific jurisdiction. It is a long-standing and festering problem. And the difficulty in that jurisdiction was that local practitioners had read the guidance to say that despite the fact that you are at fair value and could realize through sale, that, and I have heard some practitioners in that jurisdiction say that if you have no present intention to sell, you have to assume it's all use. And practice had been driven to all use. So it wasn't even an issue of a blended rate, because the blend was between zero if you sell and the full tax rate if you use. So the board's intention, as I interpreted it during the meetings that this was discussed, was to make this easy and as clean as we could, and say, if you're in that position, just assume sale and quit. Then the question came up, well, what if you affirmatively do not? So you flip it over, and you say, I just don't intend to ever sell this building. What about that? And the board said, well, okay. So if you're all the way over on the other side, you can say, okay, use a use rate. It seems to me that the committee's decision, unfortunately, tried to take two inconsistent views. One was that you could overcome the presumption in more situations than the board had specified, but you still had to say substantially all use. And I don't think those two assertions are reconcilable. So I think that's the problem that we find ourselves in, and that's some of the background as I remember it. And I don't see Mitsuhiro taking his shoes off, so so I got it right. Joanna, you were one? No, then Scott, Lawrence, Andrew.
Nothing? Okay. Wayne, based on what you just said, are you suggesting that the board's intent was that the situation described in 51C was supposed to be the only way you could overcome the presumption?
I don't believe so. I think that I do not believe, nor have any board members come back to me and said, no, we meant just this one way.
Okay.
I think what they were trying to do was to make it clean and easy, and in particular to avoid the possibility that practice, that some preparer would find him or herself in the position of an auditor saying, you must prove to me that the presumption is not rebutted. So kind of do jujitsu on them.
My head hurts, but okay.
And so they wanted to make it as clean and as easy, as I say, particularly in this jurisdiction as possible, and to get rid of the problem.
So the board wanted to say, if you go with the presumption, you're fine. If you think you can overcome it, present your facts, and maybe you'll overcome it.
I think that's correct, yes.
Okay. Well, in that case, it seems like the revised agenda decision says that.
Okay. Ruth, you are next, I think.
I'm just a little confused. I don't object to striking out the second piece about dual use, but looking at 51C and not arguing again about the if and only if, because I think that's a lost case, but I don't see what other circumstances there would be. But 51C, in the illustrative example, there is a sentence that says, if the presumption is not rebutted, the deferred tax reflects the tax consequences of recovering the carrying amount entirely through sale, even if the entity expects to earn rental income from the property before sale. Now, to me, that's pretty strong evidence that if you are on the sale model and you're going to recover from sale, then you can't have dual use. And so I wonder what the point of having the rebuttable presumption was then. If why would they say that you can assume that you're going to sell it and then allow you to have a blended tax rate? I don't understand that. And I don't understand why, you know, those words are in the example. They're pretty clear to me. So it doesn't make any sense. Why did they put that change in? Why is 51C there and the example there with those words if the board didn't intend that if you're going to recover through sale, then the rate that you should use should reflect the sale rate?
Ross?
I do have a problem understanding what the amendment leads to. Let's take a case. Let's say you have an entity that has a business model where the rents over a period of 10 years, but after 10 years, they sell. That's the business model. Objective evidence that the business model is this one. What is Paragraph 51 saying? I am unsure about what it says. Does it say that you can assume that you will be in the sale scenario, and so you just apply tax rate applicable to recovery through sale? Or can you rebut the presumption and say, because my business model is to earn rental for 10 years, I apply paragraph 51 and 51A, and I must do, or can do, that's what I don't know, dual rate treatment. But I understand, as you said, Wayne, that the objective was to ease the application of deferred tax. And we know that in the case I just described, the difficulty of applying the dual tax rate system is that you don't know how much you allocate to recovery through use versus recovery through sale. And so perhaps the board's intent was to say, well, in that case, don't worry about the dual tax rate system and just go through recovery through sale. But I must say I'm confused about what was targeted with this amendment and how should it be read in the case I described. Is there a mandatory treatment or is there an optional treatment? I just don't know.
Can I just make an observation? IAS 12 does focus on recovery of the carrying amount. And obviously when you're going to be using a property and then selling it, In terms of proceeds, you're getting some rental income in, so that's one form of proceeds, and some disposal proceeds as well. But whilst you're receiving in the rental proceeds, doesn't necessarily mean that you're recovering the carrying amount as such, particularly where we're using the fair value model. So in terms of recovering the carrying amount, which is the focus of IAS 12, that could well be, and I think this is the basis for a rebuttable presumption, that the carrying amount is entirely, or substantially entirely, recovered through sale rather than through use.
So you compensate with a future increases in market prices. So basically you are saying that you are recovering through sale because the residual value of the building you will sell in 10 years' time will have increased so that when you will sell it, you are recovering entirely your carrying amount today. So you expect the residual value to increase over time. But this is not written, you know. it's
yes, the fair value model. That's right.
Under the fair value model, yeah.
Joanna, Sarah, Andrew, Guido.
I was just going to comment to a certain extent on both what Ruth and Laurence have said. And Ruth, the example in 51C, and what I think you've said is that you're confused as to why we are taking out that last, proposing to take out that last bit, when 51C clearly says, has those words in there. But 51C are assuming that you don't rebut it, i.e., you do that if you don't rebut it. And what we were saying in the tentative decision is, but if you do rebut it, you must do the opposite. But the key is that, and as Laurence says, she's confused, and I agree, and I think that was the whole issue about this, in fact, is that 51 on its own is confusing, and but the board didn't solve that. They put in a specific thing in 51C, and what we did when we did the tentative decision, if you like, was go beyond what the board did because we were trying to solve 51 as well. And so people have come back to us and said, well, don't do that. Just stick with the actual question you were asked and what the board did and deal with that. And to me, I think that's what we've done. But we haven't solved the overall problem, which is can you or must you, as you said, do dual or a blended, and we haven't solved that problem, but all we have done and what the board did is look at a specific circumstance and say, in these circumstances, that is a rebuttable presumption. End of story. And all we've done, I think, is clarify that, and I think that's the only thing we can do. And so I absolutely support what has been done and agree that we made a mistake, arguably, or we did, in terms of what we put into the tentative decision. We went well beyond our brief.
Sarah?
I kind of building on what Joanna said, but taking a slightly different approach. And this is a question I raised last time and didn't do it very eloquently and probably won't today either. We spent quite a lot of time talking about this concept of a rebuttable presumption and could there be other conditions that would arise that would also allow you to rebut the presumption. And we write in our agenda decision that, yes, indeed, that could occur because 51C is expressed as a rebuttable presumption and because the rebuttable presumption doesn't express as if and only if, then there could be other circumstances. And then we go on to say, therefore, the standard is clear, or now we're saying provide sufficient guidance. Well, I'm wondering if apparently it didn't, because we had to provide some more wording to make it clear that the standard was clear or provided sufficient guidance. So I'm kind of wondering if what we've really done is, you know, like Joanna said, we've provided some guidance here in something that perhaps wasn't so clear. So what I said last time, and I would say it again this time, is I'm uncomfortable with our saying that the standard provided sufficient guidance or was clear, because apparently it wasn't. We had to spend quite a lot of time talking about it and then writing more to make it be clear.
But if I may, that raises exactly the point I had about not the rest of it, but the last paragraph. If we can hold that thought.
Okay.
Because it is one I want to raise. But I think I said Andrew and then Guido.
Well, I was happy with the deletion of the words. I think, well, I see it as a two-step process. 51C says, do you rebut the presumption? And then if you rebut the presumption, you go back to the principles in 51 and 51A, which say, you know, look to how you're going to recover the asset, and if it's a dual use, it's dual use. So I'm happy with the deletion of that. I could have a couple of other comments. I mean, in the agenda decision, we say we think the presumption in paragraph 51C of IS-12 can be rebutted. I think we should, if we're going to say that, I think we should use the word is rebutted rather than to imply some optionality about it, to be consistent with the existing words in paragraph 50C when it talks 51C when it talks about the rebutting. But perhaps more importantly, you know, I know the staff in the paper say it's not their role to think of other circumstances, but I'm struggling to see what other circumstances there might be. And if, okay, we can have a debate about the words if and only if, but if there are no other circumstances, and I struggle to think of any, I would rather we say that.
Question, please. If you say is rebutted, we take that wording in the standard, then shouldn't we then also say when it is rebutted?
Yeah, what he just said. Well, exactly. And when would it be rebutted other than the circumstances in the standard? It's kind of an academic debate to me, really, because I can't. I know your role is not to. You say your role is not to go searching for other circumstances, but it would be helpful to have one example.
In my case, shall you rebut?
Guido?
It was very helpful to me when you told us what the rationale was behind the thinking that the board discussed that, because reading it with that knowledge and listening to Andrew, I think that what 51C says is, and what I understand is, it was also there to provide relief to preparers because it's very hard to make this calculation of dual use, especially when you have the fair value model. So they said, okay, to make it easy for you, there is a presumption that's all consumed through sale, full stop. Then the question came, but when it's clearly not this way, and then the board said, okay, in this case, the presumption is rebutted. There is no option. It is rebutted. And I think what we are saying, that's why I tend to disagree with what Andrew said, is there might be other instances when there is enough clear evidence where it can be rebutted. So if you have 50-50, 40-50, 40-60, whatever, and so that's why I would say we should leave it as it is in here. It can be rebutted in this case. There are instances where it is rebutted, and that's the example in 51C, where clearly almost all or substantially all of the economic benefits are consumed for use. There are other instances where you might have dual use, as I said, 50-50, 40-60, and then it can be rebutted as long as you have clear evidence. So that's why I'm perfectly fine with the wording. The only comment that I would have is in the second paragraph we talk about a matter of policy. I always have a problem with the word policy. That seems to me that you can easily choose what you do, and I don't think it's a policy choice. If the others don't have a problem with the word policy, that's fine. I just wanted to raise that point. Otherwise, I'm perfectly fine with the wording. And then also, I agree with the last paragraph where we say it provides sufficient guidance, you know, because it said it is rebutted in this case. You know, then if you read it in this from this perspective, I think the standard is clear.
Okay, we have a couple of proposals. Michael, correct me if I leave anything out. One is Andrew's proposal. Oh, excuse me, John, I didn't see your light flashing before I...
No, I was just wanting to say I agree with Guido. I think there are circumstances where dual purpose could rebut this presumption. So that's, I think that's what we're trying to cover here. But it's maybe to answer also your question about the conclusion of the last paragraph. We're saying here that it's clear, it can be rebutted. If doesn't mean if and only if. But actually, maybe it's not that clear. And I wonder why we're not making a small amendment to the wording that is there to say, for example, which would clarify exactly what the wording means. Because if you read 51C, it seems to have two poles, you know, two extremes. You know, either you're in A or you're in B, and it's all or nothing. I can read it very easily, and that's why you have diversity of practice on that. So my comment is not, I agree with what's been said here, but I wonder if this would not be a candidate, why is it not a candidate to make an amendment to, a small amendment to the standard. And instead of saying something that is, I think it's wrong, the committee thinks that the standard provides sufficient guidance and diversity in practice on the rebuttal should not emerge. It's already there. Anyway, that's to answer really your concern.
Let's take this in steps. The first step is there more than one situation in which the presumption can be rebutted? What that might be, we'll come to in a minute. But does the committee agree that there could be more than one, more than the identified situation in which it can be rebutted? I see Ruth shaking her head no. Are there any others to that? Okay, well, that's kind of the second piece, is the board couldn't either. Or the board chose not to. So the board either couldn't identify or affirmatively chose not to address the issue that Laurence raised about whether or not that overcomes the presumption. So the question is, does the committee believe that the board should attempt to identify more specific situations in which they believe that the presumption should be overcome, or should we stay with what John described as a situation that describes the opposites, and let's practice resolve the middle? Laurence and then Guido. Laurence, you had your light on.
Yes.
Sorry, I missed it.
No, but your comment was right on point. I think we need to have a further understanding of what was the board's intent in making that amendment. And specifically to the case I describe, did the board want to provide relief to those entities from applying a dual rate tax?
And the answer is yes.
Okay.
In a specific case in Hong Kong, the tax on the sale of the building is zero. And so the people in Hong Kong said, we can demonstrate that if we rent this thing for 10 years, we will still recover the carrying amount, which is fair value, with no tax implications. And so they did not have to say, well, yeah, but you're going to use it for 10 years, so you ought to record deferred tax at the operating rate. Having heard this argument many times, knowing full well that you will never write a check for that tax. You won't pay it. So in the situation that you described, my belief, and I'd ask Wei Guo if he would concur, and Mitsuhiro, was that the situation you described, the boards would have said, presume sale, and not use a blended rate.
What if in your case, you are unable to demonstrate that in 10 years' time you will recover the carrying amount through sale. In that case, was it still the board's intent to provide relief and say, still go for the sale manner of recovery?
My personal recollection, Wei Guo Mitsuhiro confirmed for me, is yes. They still wanted to grant the exception.
Okay, but then this should be clarified.
Pardon me?
This should be made better clear. Sorry, I can't speak English, but make it more clear.
Joanna?
I was going to come back on your thought as to whether we needed to go back to the board and ask them if they deliberately put, or they just couldn't think of, whether there was another rebuttal. And I'm wondering whether what we're at, by you asking the question, and I fully agree you were not chair of the committee at the time that we put this tentative decision out, but effectively what we're doing then is actually revisiting what we previously put out, and everybody was all the submitters have come back saying they were comfortable about that first bit around the if and only if, and I think we are reopening the debate that we had at the last meeting. And I would say, well, we've reached that point. The submitters have come back and basically agreed with what we've said, that yes, it's if and only if. It's not if and only if, and there could be other circumstances, and we last meeting said we didn't need to identify them or ask the board to. Therefore, to me, I guess I'm not sure that we should necessarily go any further than that. And I guess I would also say I'll stop there.
Joanna, my reason for parsing the question was that way was because I perceived that others might want to reopen, and I didn't want to preclude any discussion. That's Guido?
Come back, maybe that's the confusion around the table, is what does this sentence, the presumption is rebutted if, mean? And the way I understand it is the board wanted to say there is a situation where it is rebutted. The board didn't say the presumption can be rebutted. It is rebutted. And then it is rebutted when substantially all of the economic benefits are consumed through use. So I guess a lot of people around the table have a problem with imagining other situations besides a business model that shows you how you will use it. I mean, the business model is always the basis. What the board wanted to say here, the way I understood it after you told us at the beginning, Wayne, was the board just wanted to tell us if there is a business model that shows you that substantially all will be consumed for use, then the presumption is rebutted. There might be other situations based on the business model. It's always based on the business model. Otherwise, I couldn't think of any other situation how you can evidence that use. But there might be other situations where not substantially all is consumed for use, always based on the business model, and then you can rebut it. That's the way I understand it. If it's that way, then maybe that's the confusion.
It's optional in that case?
Yes. Because you have... There is a relief out there. That's my understanding of this. Okay, let's make it easy for you. Let's assume it's all for sale. That's it. But there's one situation where you can't use it, this presumption. That's this example here.
There's one situation where it's so clear that the presumption is wrong.
Right.
You can't go with the presumption.
Right.
In every other situation, going with the presumption is okay. But you might also have facts that could rebut.
You may have a business model that tells you 50-50 or whatever.
You might also have facts.
I think that's right.
Yeah. Okay. Given that, and do I see any argument with the articulation that Guido and Scott have just gone through? Ruth?
I had that point anymore, but I think if we come back to the agenda decision, I think that this will result in greater diversity in practice rather than less. So I would rather that what we said is that the committee thinks that the standard provides sufficient guidance, full stop, and decided not to take it onto the agenda.
If I may, then, moving to that, may I suggest a further amendment? First, our conversation makes it clear that we don't think it provides sufficient guidance, and that it will create more diversity in practice. So would it, that was my concern. It's a little, both of the assertions in it are silly. Would it be instead acceptable to say that, consistent with the rationale just described, the committee decided not to add it to the agenda? Okay. Good enough. Well, that was easy. If your head hurt before, now we're going to do inside-outside basis.
Yes.
Well, my head didn't hurt before, so now we don't have to do inside-outside.
No, that's not a choice.
So it's also a review of a tentative agenda decision published in the September 2011 IFRIC update. The committee received the request for clarification of the calculation of a deferred tax in circumstances where an entity holds a subsidiary that has a single asset within it. Specifically, the question asked was whether the tax base described in paragraph 11 of IS 12 and that is used to calculate the deferred tax should be the tax base of the single asset within the entity that holds it, or whether it should be the tax base of the shares of the entity holding the asset. The submission explained that the question arises because it is common that the asset will be realized by selling the shares of the entity that holds the asset rather than selling the asset on its own. We have received 5 comment letters with respect to the tentative agenda decision. 3 letters supported the decision not to take the issue onto the committee's agenda, and 2 of them did not object to it. Considering the comments received, we noted in particular that 2 comment letters indicated that there is significant diversity in practice on this issue. Consequently, we recommend undertaking outreach to the National Standard Setters Group and IOSCO in order to address this concern and to see what needs to be done to achieve a consistent application, maybe an annual approval or an interpretation. In addition, we're interested in the observations that the committee members made on this issue. Did the committee members observe that the issue is widespread and has practical relevance, and did the committee members observe that there is significant diversity in practice? If the committee agrees with our technical analysis and our recommendation to undertake outreach, our recommendation would be, if it turns out that there's significant diversity practice, we will propose the committee to recommend to the board that it should make a clarification through the annual improvements process. If it, however, turns out that there's no significant diversity in practice, we will propose to go forward with an agenda decision. With respect to the tentative agenda decision reported in the September 2011 IFRIC update, we want to highlight that 3 comment letters raised the concern that the 2nd and the 3rd paragraph of the tentative agenda decision appear to be inconsistent. While the 2nd paragraph suggests that the existing guidance is clear and that all entities should record deferred tax on temporary differences arising from both the underlying asset and the investment in the shares of the entities that holds the asset, the third paragraph seems to imply that there will be no clear answer until the board resolves the issue through a broader reconsideration of the principles in IS 12. We agree that the wording could be improved to resolve this apparent inconsistency between both paragraphs, and consequently we proposed to amend the tentative agenda decision in Appendix A of the agenda paper. However, we disagree that there is an inconsistency between both paragraphs. The second paragraph of the tentative agenda decision solely addresses the accounting according to the current standard, whereas the third paragraph relates to the perceived need to make fundamental revisions to the principles in IS 12 for deferred tax accounting. Yeah, in summary, if the committee agrees with our recommendation, we will present a discussion of the outreach results together with either a draft tentative agenda decision or a proposed amendment for annual improvements at the January 2012 committee meeting. Consequently, we want to ask the following questions to the committee members. First, have the committee members observed that the issue addressed in the submission is widespread and has practical relevance, and that there are significant divergent interpretations? Second, does the committee agree with our recommendation to carry out further outreach and to report on it at the January 2012 committee meeting with recommendations derived from the results of that outreach? And finally, does the committee have any comments on the proposed wording for the tentative agenda decision in Appendix A?
Andrew?
I'm not convinced that further outreach is necessary, because I thought we've established the situation on diversity already, but I don't suppose I've got any strong objections to it. But in terms of the agenda decision, I don't have problems with the substance of the agenda decision, but just in terms of the way it's written, the word must appears in several places in the agenda decision. And I just thought that was kind of unusual language for an agenda decision. I didn't think we were that prescriptive in that black and white in the way we phrase these things. We noted this and noted that. So I'm not sure about the word must. But the thing that troubles me is we go through the analysis and say the answer's X, but by the way, that might not present a true and fair view. And so I really struggle with that language. I'm fine to refer it to any further consideration of the issue would require broader consideration by the board, but to imply in the agenda decision that the answer that we think is the right answer is not a faithful representation, I think is, well, it doesn't do much credibility for the standards or the board, and I'm concerned about that precedent. So I would take any reference out about it not being a faithful representation, I would take that out.
So you'd take out the entire addition at the end of that paragraph?
Well, you could say that's the answer. Any further consideration of this issue would need to be done in a broader, broader review of IS 12. I don't have a problem with that. It's just those particular words, faithful representation.
Okay. Ruth, and then Sarah, Scott.
Exactly the same point as Andrew. I was quite horrified to see those words, actually. I thought that's not going to do any of us or IFRS much good. So I would like to see those words taken out. But I would also like to see us go back to the original agenda decision that was proposed by the staff. Because my recollection is that all that you originally proposed in the last meeting was to put in a statement that this issue is too broad to be addressed by the IFRIC through an agenda decision and recommended be addressed by the board. That's what you'd recommended. And then during the meeting, we had added in the words about inside and outside differences, from my recollection. And I wonder if that's what we should go back to. Just a simple agenda decision that says that these are issues too broad to be addressed by the IFRIC and recommend that it be referred to the board.
Sarah?
I think I would recommend, if we need to have an agenda decision that seems definitive, we also note that we're going to do more outreach and the staff will report back in January. So that would lead me to think that we really don't want to do a final agenda decision at this point, because we haven't made up our minds finally about what we're going to do. So I think I would vote for saying something continuing. You know, I mean, we have to mention that we discussed it, but that in light of the comment letters received, and we felt there was a need to do more outreach, and so we're going to study the issue further. End of statement. In the way
that's correct. If you want us to do that further outreach, then we wouldn't be finalizing the agenda decision today. We'd simply note that it was ongoing and we'd be bringing it back next time.
Okay.
Okay. Scott, Guido, Lawrence.
I agree with the staff's technical analysis. I'm along the same lines as Andrew in thinking I don't know if we need any further outreach to know that the issue is widespread and there's diversity. And so if there is, as I understand the staff's recommendation, if it turns out that the issue is widespread and there is diversity, then the thought is to go annual improvement. That seems fine with me. If there's a lot of diversity, then I'm more inclined to do it as an annual improvement for transition reasons rather than doing an agenda decision. So I mean, it seems to me that that's where we're headed. If we wanted to do it as an agenda decision, and I do think this standard is clear enough that we conceivably could, I have the same concern about that added sentence that, by saying here's the answer, but it might not be a faithful representation, we're confusing the issue. But it seems like we're headed towards an annual improvement, which is fine with me.
Guido?
I agree with Scott. I think there's diversity in practice. The best way to address it is through annual improvement. A bit having a problem with what Ruth said, because I think we said it's too broad for us to address the issue. We didn't relate to the issue that we discussed here, specifically the inside-outside basis differences for a corporate wrapper, but I think the whole IS-12 problem that maybe IS-12 is not representing faithfully, if I can use these words, some situations other than what we have seen here. So I think we have not said this issue is too broad for us to tackle. IS-12 gives you the answer, but if you want to repair, so to say, the presentation in IS-12, that's too broad for us as IFRIC. That has to go to the board.
Lawrence?
Two comments. The first one on the agenda decision, effectively the addition. I could have read it as opening the door to a true and fair view of a right. So I completely agree with the other ones. I say don't have it. With respect to the technical analysis and where we would be heading to if we were to do something other than an agenda decision, I note that when those assets, those single assets, are put into corporate shares, really the objective is to change the tax status of those assets. So with what is described in the second paragraph of the agenda decision, that you must distinguish two types of temporary differences, inside and outside basis, I question whether this is the right approach. Aren't we paying too much focus on the form over the substance? Yeah. The substance is that putting those assets into a corporate shell is changing the tax status of the assets. And so I would not distinguish two sets of temporary difference. And I would agree with Guido to say that this is a broad issue to be considered possibly by the board. about when would you consider that something wrapped up in a corporate change or should be considered just as one with the asset rather than in two separate things. I do not see the corporate share here as equivalent to a subsidiary for which I would recognize, you know, those what you call outside basis temporary difference.
Luca? I'm sorry, I didn't mean to cut you off. Luca?
I had the same comments on Sarah. I think that's the, but you have a response before. If we decide to go on the outsource, the agenda decision should reflect that there are continuous activities on this and that the final decision will be taken after the results of the outsource.
Joanna, and then I'll try and see if I can put a ribbon around it.
I guess it seems to me that people are saying that there is significant diversity, so doing more outreach isn't necessarily going to help anything. I then ask the question, agree that if there is significant diversity, to try to get that fixed through an agenda decision is hard because what does it mean for if you didn't do it this way? But what actually you'd put in an annual improvement when we're actually saying it's clear, I'm not quite sure as to how we could do it in that way. So what you've got in your paragraph 15 in terms of I agree with the logic of not doing it through an agenda decision, but I'm not actually sure what we would do as an annual improvement if we're actually, because we're not actually saying that it needs to change. So I'm struggling. And Wayne, I think you can wrap that up. But.
No, I guess there's two kinds of diversity in practice. One is everybody's doing it differently. The other is nobody's following the standard. Both of those are bad diversity. And the second one usually arises when, as Laurence has articulated, somebody thinks there's something fundamentally different between X and Y. So we could, in an annual improvement, either say, yes, there is something fundamentally different, or no, there isn't. So I think I hear agreement on a couple of things. Number one, the reference to faithful representation is bad drafting. We get that out of there, no matter what we do. Even if you say is not superior accounting or something like that, just get those true and fair words out of there. The second thing I'm hearing is there's really no reason to do more outreach because we already know that problem. Then the question before the House is this problem too broad for us to deal with the tools we've got because we think there's something fundamental in 12 that has to be addressed and we don't do fundamentals? Or can we do it in an annual improvement, in which case we've got to have it back so we could see what an annual improvement looks like? And Mike, you've got a plan C?
No. Just to clarify, in an annual improvement, what we'd be attempting to do would be to clarify what the standard requires, not change what the standard requires.
So may I put the question then as a choice between us saying it's too broad for this committee to deal with because it goes to a fundamental in 12, would be vote for A. Vote for B would be no, we want the staff to bring this back to us as, let me rephrase slightly, a choice between an annual improvement and a limited amendment by the board to 12. So that's the choice. Can I see a show of hands for A, which is it's too broad for us to deal with? Laurence is voting for that one. And for B, which is the staff does more work and we look at it again in January. Okay. You didn't need Christmas, Thomas.
Yes.
Okay. We have 25 minutes, and I think there are too many people who want to listen to the IFRIC 15 discussion. It would not be appropriate to bring it up now. May I suggest that we go into closed session and get maybe one or two of the updates done between now and a quarter past one? So if I can ask our visitors to leave and rejoin us at 2 o'clock. And Julie, you're still on, aren't you? Pardon?
I turned you off just before you said that.
Julie, are you there? Okay, well, that counts out.
Wayne?
Ah, Julie is here.
Okay.
The mute was stuck. I'm sorry.
Well, let's just wait and make sure that they've turned off the broadcast. Okay, we need to wait a minute. There is at least one issue here that we can resolve that I don't know that anybody much cares whether it's broadcast or not. We do need to decide who the chosen victims are to review IFRIC update this time. Do I see volunteers, Ruth, Andrew? Good.
Thank you.
I don't know what the brain damage is out there, but we're obviously not gaining anything. Shall we just break and say 2 o'clock? Good. Back at 2:00.